support for Homer Grown comes from Wagon Wheel Garden and Pet, providing plants and gardening supplies for South Peninsula's gardeners. Open year-round, Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 6, and Saturday, 10 to 5. Learn more at akwagonwheel.com and 907-235-8777. Additional support comes from Woda Botanicals, a retail store featuring tea, spices, herbal remedies, and books. Plant people focused on food, medicine, and discovery. In downtown Homer and on the web at wodabotanicals.com. Hello and welcome to Homer Grown. This is a show about gardening, agriculture, and wild habitat. My name is Desiree Hagen, and I live on a micro farm in Fritz Creek, Alaska. In this episode, we talk with Rachel Lord of Alaska Stems about the business of cut flowers, and we also visit Tina Garay, who has been collecting seeds from other countries and has a collection of rare perennial flowers, shrubs, grasses, trees, and probably some other things I'm missing. Let's get started.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
My name's Rachel Lord, and I have Alaska Stems here in Homer.
What is Alaska Stems?
Alaska Stems is a cut flower farm and floral design studio. So we grow diversified cut flowers. We sell all at local markets. We started in 2012 was our first year kind of at the farmer's market and really selling. And we've continued since then. Yeah, we do cut flowers for local markets. So farmer's market, we do some grocery stores in the spring with tulips. We do weddings. We do subscription CSA type flowers on Mondays.
When did this start?
So we started in 2012 really selling, but it started in 2010. We applied for the NRCS High Tunnel Grant. So when we applied for that grant, I knew I didn't really just want to do a hobby. It's a lot of space. I was raised by my dad's an entrepreneur, and like I like self-employment business model. So started thinking about what might be interesting, and cut flowers seemed really interesting. I didn't know anything about them, but it's an incredibly large world and a lot of directions to go in, and that seemed really appealing. It also wasn't something that anyone else was really doing, unlike vegetables, which we have some amazing vegetable growers.
Is your high tunnel on the property?
Yeah, our property is kind of tucked here in town. We actually have 13 acres. It's a rectangle and it's mostly the bluff, so we don't really have much in the way of flat ground. And so kind of the nice thing is you can't really see the high tunnels. So they're down below where the house is, and we have here by the house, we have the greenhouse that we built a couple of years ago. And so this is where I start all my seedlings. So I start thousands and thousands of seedlings in this greenhouse. It's heated, it has ventilation, it has water and electricity. And that's where I start the seedlings. And then at this time of the year, it's just vegetables for the family.
Can we look at it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So just from the outside, it looks like it's built into the slope of a hill.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So it is, like I said, we have no flat ground here. You'll see when we go down below our first high tunnel, we did actually flatten ground for it. But the other two high tunnels that we have, we terraced actually into the hillside. And here we did dig back and then pour the concrete wall up along the back. And so we are built into the hillside a bit here.
So besides the cut flowers, how much of your garden would you say is just for your own family's consumption?
We have a vegetable garden. You know, we always make sure that we grow a lot of carrots. We can store carrots really well. We eat a lot of carrots. So we have about 80 to 90 square feet that's always just in carrots. And then some other stuff. I didn't get potatoes planted this year, which I'm really sad about. But, you know, there are a lot of things going on. And so some things have to give. So I'll just get my potatoes from Dan and Luba. It's kind of a mess. But this is July, and we just learned to, like, embrace that and roll with it, I think. While we're up here, do you guys want to see the flower cooler?
Yes.
So it became really evident when we started growing tulips that we needed to have a cooler. That was probably like 2014, growing in quantity. And so we have this, it's essentially an insulated shed, and it has the CoolBot system, which I know a lot of our other farmers use as well. Yeah, so the CoolBot system takes the regular air conditioning unit, just a home air conditioning unit, and can drop that temperature down much lower than, it will only go to 60 is the lowest it will go. We keep it for our mixed flowers. We try to keep it around 38. I don't ship peonies. I'm not too worried about having a lower temperature and a really exact temperature. And I have some flowers that don't like it to be quite as cold as kind of our commercial peony growers would keep their coolers. But yeah, so I can fill this, and this is where I keep all my flowers and work out of here. And I've got buckets of bouquets there because it is Monday, so it's our weekly subscription. So I do deliveries, and I have people that just come and pick up here.
Do you also do the food hub?
I do the food hub as much as I possibly can. I've had staffing challenges with COVID and everything else, so we haven't done the food hub the last few weeks. We also have had just great demand for flowers and been really pleased to be selling a bit to some other local florists and a little bit to florists up in Anchorage. So we've been moving about everything that I have the capacity to harvest. This is the kind of the lower part of our property and where our farm is focused. This little area to the right is what I kind of tried to carve out as our veg garden. It's being slightly overrun, but, you know, it's growing stuff too, so that's nice. When I moved here in 2008, there was no garden of any sort, and this was all just alders and ferns and calamagrastis. So over in that area, I chiseled out fern hummocks by hand, and Ben had an old tiller from Montgomery Ward that his parents had had out east. So we used that and was able to kind of just dig out three little beds for a veg garden, and that expanded over time over here. And then we had a seine web fence that was kind of for these outside beds that went around these outside beds. When we put in these upper two high tunnels, we expanded the fence line, and we just have all these scabbed boards everywhere because the moose are super into getting in. So we just kind of keep patching the boards as much as we can. We have three high tunnels. We have our bigger one, the original one's down below, and it's an old farm tech, 30 by 72. And then these are two Rymals that we have that are, I say like 24 by 48 or something along those lines. These are the ones that have permanent beds. They're terraced into the hillside. These ones also have electricity and automatic venting and things. So that's really delightful.
When you say they're permanent beds, are those primarily for perennial plants?
No, they're annuals and bulbs. I do in most of our beds, but the beds are set in there with wood and rebar and are stepped down the hill. We had had a pond. We dug kind of a little pond a lot of years ago and used that for irrigation for a while. It was kind of an attractive nuisance for the moose, and they'd break in whatever we had had around it, and they'd wallow around in it. And our drip line, I mean, my filters were getting clogged every day. So a couple seasons ago, I bought that tank from Home Depot. So we're able to fill that tank, and it still has to get filled pretty regularly, but it's a much cleaner way to store water. And we do have a well, but it doesn't have great flow, so we don't pull off it directly for all the water needs. I don't think it could handle that. So we're able to fill that and store the water that way.
Your husband operates a sawmill?
So he has small potato sawmill, and then he has Right Angle Enterprises, like general contracting construction. He's super supportive of this farm and our business. He told me a lot of years ago he had no interest in being a farmer. So he is like main support and an infrastructure help because he's real good at those things. But otherwise, it's kind of a one-person show.
I'm asking because I see a pile of wood chips, and I'm wondering how much of this operation maybe comes from scraps from...
Definitely, like, our fencing is scraps from the sawmill. largely. The wood chips here, a couple years ago, we bought a chipper for our tractor. Primarily, we purchased that actually to deal with our tulip bulbs. So we grow usually around 20,000 tulips a season. And when we pull them in the spring, we actually pull them by the bulb. And the tulip bulbs are a one-time use. So we pull them, we store the tulips on the bulb if we need to store them in the cooler, and then they're cut off. And then what? When we just throw them in the compost pile, they just are weeds. Like, they just grow more tulips, and that's kind of a problem. So I was kind of excited that they might be fodder for other people's pigs. They're apparently kind of toxic to pigs, so they can't be used for that. And so now we got the chipper and we chip them, and they compost really nicely. And they don't just turn into a giant pile of weeds. The other benefit of having the chipper is that when we have, you know, after this past winter, we had a tremendous amount of downed alders and elderberry, and we can chip that. The elderberry, we actually chip and just compost. It composts really nicely. It's a lot of green material. The alder, we chip, and then I have it staged to use for mulch someday.
Have you ever read The Botany of Desire?
I have not, but it's on my bookshelf.
There's a whole section on tulips. And about how they crashed the economy in Holland in the 1600s.
Yeah, there's a lot of really interesting stuff with those big trends that really pulled a lot of dollars along with them. There's another book, Flower Confidential. It was a really interesting book about kind of the cut flower industry over time.
Is there anyone else in Alaska that's involved in the cut flower industry in the way that you are?
There are definitely more people now than there were when I started. I'd say even in just the last few years, there's definitely been an increase in the number of folks doing diversified cut flowers. Still not a ton, but they definitely exist, which is fun. So in here, we had our tulips this past spring. We try to move them every year. This is our original high tunnel, so it's definitely a very low input high tunnel. We kind of took the perspective of kind of a temporary structure when we built it, but that was however long 2010 was. We just replaced the top last year. It's very basic and it also serves us pretty well. I have some space in here for annuals, but I've been moving quite a bit of this tunnel over into perennials. These here are rose lilies. They're kind of a double lightly scented lily. I had a lot of the standard lily that you see around here a lot, the Asiatic lilies and the hybrids. And I pulled them out with the intention to move them outside. We're taking a pause now on the lily front because that didn't happen. And we also have this is bed of dahlias that will be one of our main flowers in the next 4 weeks, in the next month. Dahlias will really pick up and start taking over. And these guys will get 8 feet tall. 5 to 8 feet tall.
And those are perennials?
No, they're a tender bulb. Every year I try to store them. I fail miserably at it. There are some other folks, Brandon McLean, who has East Hill Florals, stores dahlias like a champ, and he actually sells the divisions. He does a great job. I try every year, and every year I just fail. But, you know, it's another year, so I'll keep trying. So the dahlia tubers, we dig them after a light frost. We cut the plant down. One thing that I'm trying is to leave the tubers, and kind of like with potatoes where you leave them in the ground for a little bit after the vegetation dies down, to let them harden a bit. And we dig them up. We wash them off. We let them dry. And then they kind of make this giant claw, kind of like multiple potatoes almost, like long fingers. And you can divide them. So people divide in the fall or in the spring. I've tried both. And similar to a potato, you have to make sure that you have the eye on there. The eyes on dahlias are all clustered in the crown area. It's a pretty neat process to find those divisions and to make them happen. And then it's a temperature and humidity game in terms of how you store them. Carrots we throw into plastic bags and we just put them in our cooler, which we essentially turn into a root cellar in the wintertime. And they will last until May. My dahlias I think it's a bit too humid in there for them and they kind of rot. But I think I got as close as possible this year and I'm going to try a little bit more for this coming winter with a mix of perlite and vermiculite and a little bit of potting soil and having them layered like that. It's only been like 10 years. I'm going to just keep trying. I've had a number of years of challenges with having help hired that's able to come. So I've twice now I've hired full-time farm managers that haven't been able to show up because they've spent 2 months and I've spent 2 months looking for housing and they've not been able to find housing. This year I have a couple of really phenomenal part-time folks that are just really great, you know, and I think we're kind of at the point of really needing, I need to have a full-time person who can really be taking charge on the farm end of things and knowing what needs to happen. So we'll be looking for that yet again for 2023.
Are you looking to expand?
Yeah, I'm not looking to expand in terms of space, but I know that we have capacity limitations on how much we can produce and how much we can sell. So like right now, we're a little bit limited out on both of those just by capacity. And so by expanding the capacity, I'm excited to really continue to work to maximize the space that we have cultivated. So we can turn back out and head up to the other two high tunnels. Well, those are our horses, Butterscotch and Sonora. I don't think Ben really knew that I had such a deeply hidden horse history. But it all came out and I realized that I'm an adult now and I can kind of do what I want within reason. And so I started pounding posts in and put up an electric fence to get myself a pony a couple years ago. And then we needed another pony for
company. I mean,
help,
that's a pretty positive thing to come out in a relationship,
right?
I think.
Yeah.
There's worse things.
Yeah. There are. So this is we call this the lower high tunnel. We have the upper high tunnel and the lower high tunnel. These are the terraced beds. Just like in the other, all three of our high tunnels have drip line irrigation set on timers. I kind of stage things, you know, we have the tulips and then we have our early annuals. We have our late annuals. We have our later bulbs like the dahlias. And then we'll flip over for tulips. So this tunnel will get flipped over for tulips, which we will plant in late September, early October. So these are our late snapdragons, phlox, orlea, some grasses, frosted explosion grass, this is stock or matthiola that's just about kicked for its run. But this is the second planting of stock that we've done. I have a third planting outside and the fourth planting got lost in the fray of spring. So that didn't quite pan out. But we have our zinnias, asters just starting to come on. And ageratum floss flower, which is lovely. I was excited to give it a try again this year. I don't love it, but I thought I'd grow a little bit of it.
One is that?
It's up here and it's kind of purple and pinkish and it's kind of looks almost fuzzy. We had incredibly heavy cutworm pressure this spring. We always get some cutworm, but this was a pretty intense year for it. And they took out almost all of the ageratum.
What causes the cutworms?
I mean, they're the larval stage of a moth, and they just really love, they go into the soil and they chew your seedling down right at the soil surface. So you might go out in the morning and you just see all these seedlings just laying on their sides. And it looks like somebody just took a little tiny axe and chopped them down. That's from those cutworms. And I don't know why this year for us was especially bad. They just, like a lot of things, they seem to cycle. Sometimes they're worse than others. We always struggle with zinnias because of how cool and moist it is here. So we get a lot of botrytis. That's one of our primary challenges with our flowers is botrytis or gray mold. I keep doors open. I keep a lot of ventilation going. And I try to have a little bit of increased spacing to what you could grow zinnias on a tighter spacing. You could grow a lot of stuff on a tighter spacing, but we just end up having so much loss to the botrytis. So outside, I have a couple of beds of perennials, kind of mixed perennials. I have a bed of peonies down here, and I have a bed of peonies up by the house. I don't grow a ton of peonies. Like I said, it's all for local market. So I probably have, I don't know, 100 plants, maybe 150 plants total. And then the rest of this is all various annuals. So I have some summer ranunculus, which I'm excited about, are kind of working. Sunflowers are coming up, some more anise hyssop, which is a really lovely herb, but it's also really got great foliage that holds well in bouquets.
Is that in the back?
Yeah, it's kind of the darker purplish sort of stuff. A fun little flower called white mignonette at the end there. It's quite short, but it smells delightful. outside stock is just starting to come on. I pronounce it Nicotiana. So it's a tobacco plant that's just starting to flower. Yeah. And those get huge. I love them. They're kind of sticky, the stems, and I don't love that, but some outside phlox. We do flowering kale. So we'll continue to grow this stretch of kale and we strip the lower leaves and it keeps growing up and we'll cut it and put it in bouquets later on in the summer. Straw flower, honeywort, colored yarrow, feverfew.
So I notice in these rows you have kind of like a mesh. It looks like maybe 6-inch squares. Mm-hmm. Do you use that for your spacing or does it act as like a trellis?
Yeah, it's a horizontal netting for trellising. So it's a Hortonova 6-inch. You nailed it. And we horizontal net almost everything that we grow. It's a pain to harvest through. It's really unpleasant. But what happens is that the plants just will start to fall over. And as soon as they do, it's either a tangled mess like the phlox get, or say with a flower like the snapdragons, they're gravitropic. So they're always going up, wherever up is. And so as this plant starts to lean, the stem starts to turn to be always facing up. So you get these crazy S curves and angles that I just can't use them. So the netting really helps to keep things straight and sellable, even though it's kind of a complete pain in terms of harvesting. And then also after, you know, when we're done, we have to kind of rip it out and store it. Try to trial my plants. Like when I want to try a new flower, I try to not grow a tremendous amount of it. And then other things I learned to scale back on, like white mignonette, I think is delightful, but I really can't use that much of it. So instead of like 20 feet of it, I just have 4 or 5 feet of it. So I just have a little bit because I do love the wedding work. Weddings are just so different than market, you know, the farmer's market or CSAs or anything else where I don't need typically a lot of any one thing. We can do most color palettes. And so in terms of working with couples on their wedding flowers, really encouraging and pushing kind of the seasonal flowers and the local florals beyond like a specific, I want this kind of flower, but like, what's your color? What's the feeling you're going for? What's your vision? And then let's meet that with what we can grow and what other farmers are growing here in our local environment.
Are you familiar with Victorian flower language?
Not really. Are you? It sounds like you might be.
No, I do not. Do you know what it is?
Like the idea of like a yellow carnation means this or that?
Yeah. And my understanding is like back in Victorian times, you know, if you had somebody that you obviously couldn't talk to.
Yeah.
And wanted to send them a message, you could say like, oh, here's this, you know.
Little posy of blue bonnets. And that actually
means
something.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. So this high tunnel is a hot mess, but this is where all we had our spring ranunculus and anemones. And I put in shade cloth this year for the first time to try to encourage longer stem growth and stronger plants for the ranunculus. They love cool weather and short spring days. And what I find here is that we go from frozen winter into spring, which is 17-hour long days or 15-hour long days, and they can get really challenged by the heat and the sunshine, the long days. So the shade cloth, I think, really helped a lot. The ranunculus are all bloomed out, and now this bed has been completely taken over. This is where we had our early spring flowers. The anemones were also completely amazing this year, and they're actually still going pretty strong. They kind of got away from me in terms of capacity to cut, but it's been pretty fun to watch them. They're a really neat flower. One of the fun things about cut flowers to me is that all of these, every single different flower has not only a different, you know, you like, where does it want to be and how does it want to be treated when you start it from seed or when you transplant it, but they all have different harvest times. Like, when's the ideal time to harvest? And then how do you treat them after you harvest and how long do they last and can they be out of water? Can't they be and whatnot?
I mean, I'm sure that there's a whole art to building a bouquet and, you know, like the different color combinations or, you know, I think there's a word when you have kind of like the green filler, which is not.
Yeah, sure. So there's, yeah, there, but you're right. Like, so there's foliage, like some sort of greenery, which I love to use, like raspberry foliage. We have some dogwood that's really fantastic. The anise hyssop I grow specifically for the foliage. I have a handful of shrubs that I've been using for foliage as well. Some Arctic willow, some snowberry. I really, really like working with greenery. I think it's just tremendous. The focal flowers, what are your focal flowers going to be? Right now, we're kind of in peony focal time. We'll be moving into dahlia and sunflower focals coming up, and lilies. And then spikes, some uprights. So we have Veronica, we have the stalk, we have the snapdragons, the discs or flat flowers. So, you know, zinnias, things like that. The ranunculus are going to, which are kind of a focal flower too, because they do get really giant and kind of rose peony like. And then I always like to think of like the sparkler, the magic. So things that add some air to your florals, whether it's in like a hand tied bunch at the market or when you're arranging in a vase. So something like, I mean, even lady's mantle is just awesome magic, right? It's just got, it has so much air in it and fills space, but not completely. So fun touches like that, I always really like to have. You know, I think of cosmos are a disc, you know, they're kind of a flat disc flower, but they also are really nice and airy and have beautiful airy foliage that's really nice to use for a little bit of that too.
Where does sea holly come in?
The Eryngium texture, and textures are really nice here. I mean, and like honeywort, Cerinth is a really fun plant, and I always encourage people to try growing it because it does really nicely out here outside and in Homer. Honeywort is its common name. The bees absolutely adore it. It can be a little finicky when you cut it. I always make sure that I cut it when it's cool out. I cut it first thing in the morning or I cut it in the evening and make sure that it hydrates well. So with really all flowers, it's really great if once they're cut to make sure that they get into cold, clean water and that they have some time to hydrate, to suck some water up in a cool, dark place. So we cut everything. I really try to make sure everything's spent at least a couple hours in my cooler after I've cut it and before I'm designing with it or selling it.
So when someone buys, say, a bouquet from you, how can they have that bloom last the longest?
Yeah, so that like clean water, making sure that they have some time to hydrate before, or if, you know, if they've had the flowers out of water for a length of time. And then, you know, it's one of the challenges here in the summer is it can be so bright and light and sometimes sunny. You know, I can't really put flowers on my kitchen table in the summer because it's just direct south facing windows. So a couple of things you can do is, you know, at night you can move your flowers into a cooler place if you really want to have them, or outside, stick them on the porch and then bring them back in when you want to enjoy them. So the cooler they are, the longer they'll last. The less direct sunlight they get, the longer they'll last. I love having flowers in the bathroom. I think it's a really delightful place to have flowers. And then, as you know, and then all of these different plants have different vase lives. And so the other thing to do is just start, you know, as different flowers go, pull those out or just cut them below the bloom and compost that, and then just keep enjoying until you usually get down to something that will like last for 2 weeks or more until you're kind of just done, and then you can just compost it or toss it in the woods. I don't really use much in the way of any insecticides or pesticides. I don't like to spray, and I really don't spray. We do a lot of beneficial insects for pest control, and I do a lot of culling. I will just pull plants that are infested. And I really do love that our plants are, you know, safe to touch, safe to put your nose in and smell and enjoy for, you know, the whole family.
Did you have a connection as a child to flowers?
No. No, that connection was to horses. It really started as like what seems like it might be an interesting business to go down. It's really, really fun. I mean, delivering flowers to people is really an incredibly powerful experience. And it's one that I completely adore. And having the light that people have when, you know, when their tulips are ready in the spring, they're just so enthusiastic and kind of clamoring for that color and that beauty. It's really kind of not like anything else I've ever done or experienced. And I really love the community associated with it.
And that was Rachel Lord, owner of Alaska Stems, recorded at her farm on July 18th, 2022. Coming up next, we talk with Tina Garay and take a visit to her garden.
I'm Tina Garay, and I've lived in Homer now 32 years, and I've been a pretty much passionate gardener for, well, 45 years at least. I've always been an obsessive gardener. I'll probably be doing it till I'm 90. There's always new plants to discover. I've grown a lot of things from seed, trees, shrubs, perennials, grasses I grow from seed. And I'll take you a tour of my garden.
So are those whale bones right there?
Yeah, they're really old. Pete got to be friends with the mayor of Barrow, and he gave them to Pete.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of welded things, a lot of really great ornamentation.
So Pete used to work out in the Aleutians, and he would bring stuff home that he would find, you know, beaches and just remote areas. So we have some pretty unique stuff.
What's one of the more unique things?
Well, the U6 probably.
So I noticed you have a lot of different varieties, a lot of different colors of yarrow.
I'm starting to focus a little more on drought-tolerant plants because our weather's changing. So yarrow is one of them. It's not all hardy, but some is.
Yeah, I've never seen yarrow that color, that bright yellow.
Yeah, the taller version of that isn't hardy for me. It works good there with the sea holly. I get most of my seed from seed expeditions, or Britain always has a really good variety of seed. And there's certain genuses that I focus on, like alliums and primula, anemones, iris, so many different things. Yeah, so many geraniums. Everywhere I go, I collect seed, or I try to. You know, some people collect t-shirts, I collect seed, and that's my memory of where I've been. Because I've been gardening so long, I know what's invasive and what isn't. So I'm always very careful about that. And I was fortunate enough to go with the Alaska Rock Garden Society to Yunnan, China in 2000 for 3 weeks. And the Kunming Botanic Garden guided us and took us around to collect seed. So China has almost 30,000 different species of plants. Alaska has like 1,600 because we've been glaciated so long. So such a diversity there. And then I have about 15 things from that trip that have proven to be hardy here. So that's really fun. I love to do that.
Have you been other places since?
We tried to go to Northeast Turkey. We were planning it. Then it got politically unsafe. So then we decided to we better not take a chance. Then we were going to go back to China and go up to Sichuan, which is higher than Yunnan. It's north. It's by Tibet. But that also fell through because the guide had a heart attack and died. So I haven't gone on any really good trips. But I do, wherever I go, I try to collect seed if I think it's going to be hardy here. And we're zone 4 or 5.
What are some other places that you've kind of pinpointed as areas of the world that match the climate here?
Well, like I say, Southwest China, Tibet, Nepal, any high mountainous areas. Mongolia, there are steppes, anywhere that's high elevation, Northeast Turkey, and then the Caucasus Mountains, Ural Mountains. I have a peony from the Ural Mountains. In fact, I'll show you, this peony is amazing. And they bloom really early, late May, early June. So this, it looks like a shrub, but that is a peony from the Ural Mountains that originally came from Daisy Lee Bitter. These are the seed pods. And they split open, and then they're almost as attractive as the flower. They get red behind them, and the seeds are beautiful, big black seeds. So, yeah, the peonies, I love the wild ones. Most of mine come from Southwest China, but that one's the Ural Mountains. The Caucasus Mountains, that's another good spot to collect seed. Russia, Siberia.
Yeah, so one interesting thing that I noticed was that, you know, you would say, oh, this is a peony, or this is a lily, or this is a gladiola, but the plants did not look like any gladiolas or right. any peonies that I
because
had seen.
Because they're all species, and then the species have been hybridized to make showier plants. I like them a little more simple, maybe, less blousy. And like the peonies, I prefer the single or double petaled rather than the full-on peony, Peony officinalis, which that's a Japanese peony that's been hybridized. That is a mock orange. Beautiful shrub. I think that's one of our really, really good shrubs for us. It really hardy. That's Blizzard, mock orange Blizzard, Philadelphus mock orange.
I can smell it.
Yeah, it's just heavenly. It's very large. So people that plant it next to their house, it's going to get too big. You have to put it away, plant it farther away. Like I say, it's a good wedding shrub.
So your garden here, and garden is like kind of an understatement. I mean, it's like a whole.
Well, luckily I have all these different microclimates on my property. So we have 3.6 acres. So I identified the microclimates immediately and then started gathering, growing, and planting in the microclimate. So the garden was really spread out for a while, and now it's kind of coming together, but it's taken 15 years.
I mean, it looks so effortless. Like this garden, you know, it looks like it could be in like Better Homes and Gardens.
Well, I was in horticulture and Sunset.
But, yeah. You know, it has to be a lot of work, but it looks so perfect.
So the majority of the work is in May. As soon as the snow melts, I'm on that area and I'm cleaning it, weeding it, cutting it back. I don't cut things back in the fall. Some people do, and that's great. It works for some people. For me, I like to keep it trimmed down and then let things naturally fall on each other to protect. It's like a snow cover. So I have to cut all of that in May, and then I divide in May. And if you don't get it done in May, the division and the cleaning, you'll never catch up. Yeah, and I'm still not quite done. You know, I'm always working on it, for sure. So I like to water. That's when I really enjoy my garden, is when I water it. I hand water a lot of the beds, and then I can really enjoy it and look at it and think about how I want to change this color or that leaf, or because texture is important, texture and color. That's another important factor in this garden, is microclimate, texture, and color.
Is there any consideration to what plants you pair in the same bed with each other?
No, they just have to be in the same microclimate. Like this is more of a spring bed with more woodland. It's a little sheltered from the sun from that big tree. I'm always thinking about combinations, truly. It's really kind of an obsession of mine. I'm always thinking about which plants to combine with what for the best effect and the best growing condition for it. So that's why I have so many areas, because I have so many microclimates. It's great.
Nicole wants me to mention this plant here.
People are familiar with, the most familiar Filipendula is Queen of the Prairie. It's a tall pink one. This one is a Filipendula from Korea, Filipendula glabrima. You see the bees, the honeybees love it.
It looks like they're like caught in cotton or something.
It's a really interesting plant, and it does get a little large. It's not really on my top 10, but it's a very cool flower while it flowers. It's short flowering, and it gets a little too rambunctious for my top 10 plants, but it is a good plant. I like to combine some natives, like under this tree, the baneberry and the chiming bells start growing, and then I thought, you know, I'm just going to let them grow with the ferns and just keep this natural. And our natives, there's a couple that are really good, but most of them die back pretty quickly in preparation for winter, so I don't use a lot of our natives, although we have a beautiful campanula. And the burnets of Alaska are beautiful. The sangosorbas, I'm starting to really experiment with those. I do want to mention this. So we were in New Zealand 3 years ago, and we were at a garden in Dunedin. And I asked the main gardener if I could have a seed pod of this angelica. See, that's what I mean when I go on trips. I like to get a seed of something. Also, he gave me this very fragrant lily over here, a seed, a little bulb of that.
So
those two things are from Dunedin, New Zealand.
So that angelica, you know, I was
the smell of this is great.
Looking at that one, and I thought, yeah, it looks like an angelica, exactly like one.
Yeah.
Except it's just...
chocolate leaf.
So purple.
Yeah, the leaf is gorgeous. It's a biennial, so sometimes it comes back and sometimes it just reseeds and I'm able to keep it.
Oh, are these the usiks?
No, those actually aren't. The usik is right here. One's outside the gate.
I am not familiar with how big an usik would be.
You would never think. Yeah, see, so then when I water, the hose just rolls around it. So it's a hose guide.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of a funny thing, and nobody really knows what it is, but...
I think more people know what it is than don't.
Do you?
In Alaska, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so there's a wild gladiola, and they do look entirely different than the big blousy, you know, cut-flowered ones, which are beautiful. But I like the simpler look.
Yeah, that looks more like almost like a grass, but with, right? You know, a flower.
I don't know how to describe that. So different than the cut gladiolas you buy or grow. Anyways, it's a South African, which is always amazing and such a surprise to me when I can grow something from seed and it's from someplace like South Africa and it still grows here. It's really fun.
Is there anything that you've tried to grow or, you know, really felt was beautiful and like, oh, I want that in my garden, but just didn't work here?
Oh, there's lots. I'm from the Pacific Northwest and they can grow so many more shrubs and perennials than we can. And they went through a tropical phase, which not even close here. You know, there's no way. That's about as close as you can get to tropical is that gladiola. Yeah. So my husband, he mows and weed whacks, which I really appreciate. In fact, sometimes I like, geez, it'd be nice. But other times it's my garden and I don't have to like share it with him at all. So his pond, that's his thing. And he would get koi fish. He'd order them and they cost a fortune. And then we'd come out here and the sandhill cranes had speared them and threw them on the lawn. They don't eat them. They just kill them. I'm not sure why. I guess it's just instinct. So we have now changed to just dollar goldfish. Although he winters them over some years and then they become the cost of a koi. But he does love back here. He smokes a cigar and
drinks scotch.
Yeah. Anyways, it's a sweet area. I do like this area. It's very soothing. It's very sanctuary-like. Looks like we had a bear, though. See how the ferns are beaten down? That's generally a bear coming through here. They get into my compost, and, you know, I don't really mind. It's like they stir it up, and they don't hurt anything. They don't hurt me. I've only seen a black bear here about 10 times in 15 years, so it's not a big deal. Porcupines are more of a problem. And the porcupines go after the raspberry leaf, the geranium leaf. My neighbor, they ate her euphorbias, which are really interesting because they have a milky white sap that's really abrasive, and I'm surprised they eat that. But they will destroy our raspberries. They'll bend them down and strip the leaves. Same thing with geraniums and roses. And this, do you know Verna Pratt? She was a longtime Alaskan gardener. I was really good friends with her, and she would give me seed. And she gave me the seed from the North American Rock Garden Society, and this is a hydrangea. And I've grown that one from seed and the one from China from seed. And those are two really fun things that I've grown and I'm kind of proud of.
Has it already bloomed, or is it?
It's just getting ready to bloom. Yeah, I don't know the species of that one. It's a wild one from somewhere.
What color are the blooms?
They're creamy. But the one from China is stunning. It starts off sort of a creamy color, and then it turns like cotton candy pink, and then it fades to dusty rose. It has magenta stems. It's the hardiest hydrangea I have in my garden.
So it seems like you've gotten a lot of seeds from other people. How would you feel about people asking you for seeds?
Oh, I don't mind. I collect seed. I collect my own seed, and I do trade it and give it away and start a lot of things from my own seed. Instead of buying it every year, I just collect my own seed. Like this verbascum, that's a Greek verbascum, which is another one you would never think would be hardy here, comes back every year for the last 15 years, that same plant. And I collect seed off of that, and then we'll regrow it elsewhere or sell it.
This is on a hillside, this area, the garden. Is there consideration about water?
Well, we get, you know, like this year was such a tough year with water. It didn't rain for almost 6 weeks. So I would say probably this hillside, I had to water once or twice with the sprinkler. And we're on a well, so. But like I say, we're getting more and more drought here in Homer, in Alaska, and everywhere.
Are you adapting to that?
I'm trialing more drought-tolerant plants for sure. And seeing how different species, which one will take the most dry conditions, like geraniums, for instance, the geranium macrorhizum, and the common name for that is big root, maybe? I'm not so good with common names. It's too much to remember. If I remember the Latin, then no matter where I look in a book worldwide, what language, it's always in Latin. So it's just easier to learn the Latin. Probably don't pronounce it right, but I can spell them. So geranium macrorhizum, that one, it takes a tremendous amount of drought. I'm shocked how long it can be under eaves and not be watered. This one needs more water. That's geranium nimbus.
What are some interesting things that you've learned in knowing the Latin names?
Well, some of the Latin names describe the plant. You know, like Hirsutus is hairy, or Macrocephala is big head. So you kind of learn just descriptive names are from the Latin.
Are there other people in Alaska that are collecting seeds in the same way that you are?
Oh, yeah. Up in Anchorage, the Alaska Rock Garden Society, they collect seed. And, you know, we trade seed. They used to have a seed exchange. Seed exchanges are a really good place to get seed. You don't always get what they say it is, like it's mislabeled, but you do get a chance to grow some really good seed that's unavailable commercially. And I also, friends, trade seed from friends that grow unusual plants. There's a community of people that, once you get to know that, there's a community of people that grow unusual plants, like search out new plants and hardy plants.
You say that you are very careful about selecting plants that are not invasive.
Right.
Have you had any issues where a plant kind of went wild?
Not so much that I've grown, but I have ordered seed. Like one time I ordered seed from one of my favorite seed sources in Britain is Plant World Seed, and they have a huge selection. And I ordered some seed of, I think it was like an ajuga, and it was not ajuga. And I'm not kidding, it took over immediately. I mean, within that whole first season, I could see I had a problem. So I ripped it out, and it kept coming back for probably 2 years. So it's really important that you do not plant invasive or aggressive plants in your garden, even if they're free or they're going to fill up a space really quick, because you'll never get rid of them. That is one thing I would tell people. Do not grow invasive or really fast-spreading plants.
What is this willow right here?
So this is a Salix. Willow is Salix, Salix alba. And I have different colors of that particular species. I have red bark, orange bark, or yellow bark like this.
So Salix is like where you get the word salicylic acid. Like salicylic acid is what's in aspirin.
Yeah, and that's from willow, right. So willow is Salix. Yeah. Willow is, you know, used medicinally for headaches. Also, it helps root. Like if you want to root something and you have willows, things seem to root better.
What part do you use for rooting?
Yeah, you just cut it and stick it in a thing of water, and then you put something else in there and they root better for some reason. So these root really easily, really easily. Yeah, the honeyberries, or there's so many different names for those. That's really Lanicera.
Hathcap.
See, that's the thing about the common names. It's very confusing. It's a Lanicera and Cerulea. And then it's Hathcap, it's honeyberries. I don't know, maybe there's even more names for them. And serviceberries, Amelanchier. I actually like the Amelanchiers better, the berries better than the Hathcaps. Beautiful fall foliage. Nice white flowers. I miss not being able to do that. We can't get blooms, obviously, in the winter. So I look for barks and textures that are nice. And I love to cook, so I do a big garden. I like to cook out of my garden. Looks like we've had a critter in there.
Ooh, a tiny critter.
We have ermine here. Ermine eat the voles, so we like the ermine, but they will chase you down. If you're walking in their path, they'll come at you. So I just give them a wide berth.
And this is like, what is this structure called?
So we call it an arbor. When we were in Italy, they garden on hillsides in Italy. And that's when I decided, you know, if they can do it, I can do this. And so this arbor, I designed this arbor and my husband and his friend built it. That's for all my trial holding beds. So that's for everything I grow that I want to see if it'll be hardy. And then I've covered it with probably 4 different kinds of clematis.
Is that what's growing, like ivy?
Yeah, and that's clematis. It's already bloomed, and that's its seed head. And then the kiwi berries at the end. And those will be ripe in September. I like to pick them sort of unripe, and you bring them in, and they ripen in the house. This golden hops, just a lot of vines. It's a good place for vines. Plus, it's such a beautiful spot to sit and look out at the bay.
Oh, my gosh, what a view.
It is a great view. It really is pretty. So this is a drought-tolerant bed that I'm redoing, and I just keep adding more and more drought-tolerant things because this really dries out for some reason here. And so I pulled everything that needed water except for that filipendula, and that's struggling. It's really struggling. They like it more moist. So that is a problem we're running into now. It's just a drier climate. Well, it's just, the climate's definitely changing, and, you know, we just get more droughts and obviously the fires. Last year we had so much snow, and then it warmed up, and then the snow got so heavy that it just snapped branches. My shrubs, they split in the middle. They just really took a beating last winter. The perennials didn't because they were covered in snow, but the shrubs really took a hit. Yeah, it's a problem. I mean, the changes in our climate really make a difference.
So as we were driving in, I noticed there's some beehives out here. Are those your beehives?
The neighbors, Jones Splinters and ours beehives, yeah. So no honey yet. We're just starting it. Last year we tried it, no luck.
Last year was a bad year.
Yeah, and so then we're trying it this year, but we're thinking maybe we'll just go to the market and buy our honey. We could buy a lot of honey, I can tell you, what we put into that.
I can't imagine how much this place has changed in the last...
Oh, it's incredible. Well, if you look at the field next to us, that's what it looked like.
Just like a fireweed
field. It was just a fireweed field, absolutely, all the way across. When I look at the earlier pictures, it's almost hard to believe. It's not an easy property to garden, that's for sure, with the hills, but... Like I say, they did in Italy, and they were old, so if they can do it,
I mean, you must have really good calves.
I don't know, but some days I'll go up and down these hills so many times. Yeah, it's a great hobby. It's a great passion. I'm really happy that this is my passion because I can be doing this till I'm 90 and always discovering new plants to grow here. So.
And that was Tina Garay, recorded at her home on July 18th, 2022. Coming up next, Nicole Arevalo tells us what's happening in local agriculture.
Hi, I'm Nicole from Homer Soil and Water with this week's roundup of news and tidbits in local agriculture and wild habitat too. First up, in last episode's weekly roundup, we spoke about farmers markets here on the Southern Kenai Peninsula, where people can buy directly from local growers, bakers, and makers of all sorts of delightful things. Well, I'm very happy to announce that a new farmers market has cropped up this summer in Nikolaevsk. The Nikolaevsk Community Market is open Thursdays, June through October, from 4 to 7 p.m., and is located at 31789 Dubova Road. So, if you live out on the North Fork, or just want to pay a visit to the newest farmers market in the area, swing on out. The more local food available, the merrier we all shall be. Congratulations, Nikolaevsk! And, on a similar note, if you are a member of the Russian Old Believer communities here on the Southern Peninsula, or if you have friends who are, the USDA NRCS's Homer Field Office now has Russian language translations of pamphlets that explain how NRCS programs like the high tunnel and irrigation programs work. They also have Russian translations explaining their conservation stewardship program, which is available to local growers and forest landowners. To receive these Russian language brochures, reach out to Emily or Katie at the Homer NRCS office at 432 East Pioneer Avenue or by phone at 907-235-8177. And speaking of farmers markets, Alaska Farmers Market Week is August 7th through 13th. In preparation for that, the Alaska Farmers Market Association is having a photo contest. Got pictures of your favorite local farmers market? The prize for best photo is lunch for your local farmers market manager. This is a Facebook-based photo contest, and photos can be sent before August 5th to the Alaska Farmers Market Association Facebook page. Next, if you have this afternoon free and are interested in learning about cultivating wild Alaskan plants in your garden, the Pratt Museum is hosting a workshop at 1 p.m., taught by Nanilchik's own Sean Jakinski, Pratt Museum head gardener and Kenai Peninsula homesteader. Learn how to incorporate beautiful Alaskan wildflowers or unique alpine plants into your home garden. Sean will show you how to create the right soil and setting for coastal plants, alpine plants, bog plants, and more. You'll also explore how to make cuttings and divisions so you can propagate plants in the field and eventually share plants from your garden with your friends. You'll take home a small potted plant from the Pratt's garden at the end of the day. The cost is $20. Visit the Pratt Museum website for more. Another opportunity for local growers, if you're considering utilizing cover crops as a way to build soil health, on Wednesday, July 27th, soil health guru Jay Furrer is being brought to Homer by the Alaska staff at USDA NRCS and will be giving a talk on how cover crops can benefit your soil health. Contact us at Homer Soil and Water for details at 907-235-8177. And a reminder, since this is a flowers episode, there is still 1 week left of the third annual Homer Peony Festival. You can still take part in guided peony farm tours, get in on a peony-themed stained glass workshop, take a peony tour on the Homer trolley, or buy local peonies from the Rotary Club at the Homer Chamber of Commerce or at the Alaska Beauty Peony Co-op's new cold storage and sales facility next to the Homer Brewing Company. And if you find yourself in the Homer Airport, you may just be handed a free peony from the local Girl Scouts in collaboration with Alaska Perfect Peonies. It's all things flowers and local agriculture here at this time of year on the Southern Kenai Peninsula. What a great time to be an Alaskan.
And that's our show. I want to thank Rachel Lord of Alaska Stems and Tina Garay for talking to us. Thank you to local musicians Kevin Cope, Ryan Black, and the band Trial and Terror for our music. Thank you to co-producer Nicole Arevalo and Homer Soil and Water Conservation District. If all goes as planned, next episode, we're going to Nome. Questions, comments, recommendations can be addressed to Desiree@kbbi.org. I've been your host, Desiree Hagen, reminding you to support your local farmer. Support for Homer Grown comes from Wagon Wheel Garden and Pet, providing plants and gardening supplies for South Peninsula's gardeners. Open year-round Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 6, and Saturday, 10 to 5. Learn more at akwagonwheel.com and 907-235-8777. Additional support comes from Woda Botanicals, a retail store featuring tea, spices, herbal remedies, and books. plant people focused on food, medicine, and discovery. In downtown Homer and on the web at wotabotanicals.com.